The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I always do my research. I always have the titles and the websites of what my guests are doing, or if they're winemakers, the name of the winery, the very basic stuff. But my next guest, it seems like I'm going to be lazy, but it's a really long list. I don't want to get any of it wrong. Mark DeWolf joining us from Halifax. Mark, could you please tell the audience what you do? Because you do a lot.
In 5 minutes or less. let me see. I'm food and drink editor for Saltwire, which is all the newspapers and or most of them in Atlantic Canada. I'm the editor of the Association de la Sommelier International's magazine, which is ASI, is the kind of the governing body of sommeliers around the world. I own something called the Wolf Experiences, which is an events and tours business. I'm the founder, co-founder of the Halifax International Wine Festival. I taught sommelier programs for about 20 years, just retired from that. And there's a few other things I'm sure that I forgot.
Yeah, it's a crazy list. Right before we got started, we were laughing about it. And you were saying that's the life of being in the wine business in a smaller town. I'm curious, what is it like there in Halifax in terms of growing wine experiences and just making wine more of a part of a community when it's not a giant city? Not that Halifax is small.
No, it's not. You know, it's a growing city, you know. But yeah, for the longest time, you know, it was about people like me really pushing the wine culture, you know, and that it was back when I started about 20 years, it was slow growth. But I mean, it's an exciting wine town now. We have a lot of trained somms. We have a lot of interesting wines in the market, thanks to have the kind of unique combination of retailing out here, which is Monopoly and some private stores. So Monopoly fulfills the general brand stuff, and then you've got a couple interesting wine stores that are filling in the gaps with interest. So, and then you throw in the local wine industry too, and then you've got the basis of a pretty exciting wine culture. Maybe not to the extent of Montreal and Toronto in terms of getting, I mean, those, you're privileged in Toronto, places like Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, where you can get anything from the world. I mean, I think there's few places in the world that compare. Halifax is coming along. Not quite there, but coming along.
Oh, yeah. I think sometimes we take it for granted because we often complain about the LCBO, and sometimes rightfully so, especially when you travel and you want to bring wine back home. Okay, so let's go through a bunch of that. Actually, let's start here. The local wine scene. Obviously, I know about sparkling. A sparkling wine where you are. What are some of the other varietals? What does well in Halifax?
Yeah, I mean, if we talk in broad terms, what does well, you know, obviously right. A traditional method sparkling wine will be our signature, I think, on the global stage. But, you know, the development of Tidal Bay in 2011, which is our kind of appellation, our regional wine style, which is it's a blend, but it's got some parameters within it in terms of what you has to be half of the wine, and you can't have too much aromatic in there, but that delivers a somewhat signature style that's achievable for all the wineries, because you know, it's flexibility enough that they can use what they grow, but definable enough that there is a signature style. So it's fresh, crisp, aromatic, usually a slight touch of sweetness, although being on the tasting panel over for most of the last 12 years, a little bit of movement towards slightly drier in style. So some wineries trying to push the limits on the dryness level, and some of us judges like to keep just a touch to kind of elevate the fruit. So that's interesting. I think where we're seeing interesting progresses in some of our vinifera offerings. So really edgy Riesling, really age-worthy Riesling, and Chardonnay is, you know, in that old style Chablis, you know, and before it was too hot there, you know, so you still get some of that, yeah, elevated acidity, but the combination of a little mouthfeel and texture. So those are some more exciting things.
Yeah, I'd always wonder just about the difficulties of making wine, just because where you are with the cold and just the climatic extremes, Is it how difficult? I mean, I'm sure you talk to winemakers. How difficult is it making wine in Atlanta, Canada?
It has its challenges. It has its benefits too. I mean, I think we had an abnormally difficult year this year. We had something called a polar vortex in February. We had 2 days of minus 40, which is an aberration. Aberration, though. You know, really, we don't. For the longest time, we had not that much risk of winter kill. So. Halifax is not as cold as I think some people would think in central Canada, because, you know, I think there's a tendency outside of the Maritimes to group the Maritimes together. And so there's a big difference in temperature between Fredericton, Moncton, and Halifax. We're on a peninsula. We're totally moderated by the Atlantic Ocean. So after Victoria and Vancouver, in the winter, generally speaking, except for these aberrations, we have one of the mildest winters in the country. And in terms of our growing season, yeah, we don't accumulate a lot of heat units, but we can often be picking sometimes I've heard of people picking now, but they picked it already, but this year, but you know, sometimes we're well into October. So what we lack in heat units during the summer, we make up for in sunshine, length of growing season. So what you get is phenolically ripe grapes at extremely moderate sugar levels. So it's kind of exciting because it's really for a modern palate that you can get ripe grapes but lower alcohol wine. So in that 10, 9, 10, 11 range, that's pretty exciting stuff. And obviously the main benefit is sparkling wine, where, you know, you see Champagne and other places struggling and they're trying to pick grapes in July and early August to maintain acid levels and keep sugar down. We don't have that problem. We can just let it sit on the vine. So that's a huge advantage for sparkling.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And by the way, thank you for reminding me. Now I feel like just the stereotypical Torontonian.
You're okay.
No, but I grouped all of Atlantic Canada together, and there's hundreds of kilometers between some of the cities.
Thousands.
Yeah. And you're at the peninsula, and just the impact of the water versus other places that are a little bit more continental. All right, let's focus on Halifax. It's coming up fairly soon, November 12th, as we're taping. This is October 26th, the Best Sommelier of Canada competition. Who's competing? Who are the judges? Tell people, because people hear this, there's still time. Someone wants to come down to Halifax thinking about it. I love wine competitions, but what's happening?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so I decided to throw one thing more on my plate to organize this. Because I had so much extra time. And yeah, so what we've done is create a 4-day experience. So what we've done for the first time ever is create the Best Sommelier of Canada competition, but we created a Somme University along with it, so that, you know, historically when we create these events, we're thinking only about the competitors and the few. And then we wanted to be more Somme from across the country, from the Maritimes and the land of Canada, come in and learn around the contest. But the contest itself, which is the anchor, we have 12 competitors, 4 from British Columbia, 2 each from Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec, in Atlantic Canada. Long list, I'm sure you like Jose Luis Fernandez and Justin Madal in Toronto or the Ontario area.
Yep.
Hugo Duchesne, who came second in the Americas at the last Americas competition, from Quebec, and Doris Garcia. Atlantic, we have Leslie Quinn, who's been our best song. She won it in 2017, I think, originally, and it's done very well for herself. And a whole slew of others. And in terms of judges, you know, Virani Treve, you know, who came second in the world in 2013, is our technical lead. Oh, yeah, I forgot I also work on this. But Michelle Bouffard, who I work with on, who's the founder of Tasting Climate Change, another event I helped to produce, is one of our lead judges. Then we have Bernard Joseph Lemoyne from Atelier in Ottawa. Last is Jonathan Bauer Monterey, who is Pompette, I think, in Toronto, and was 2014 Best Sommelier of France.
So it's definitely like a who's who of people. And some of those competitors and some of the people you mentioned, like, oh yeah, they've been on the pod. So it's an impressive list. Do you, and not with giving away anything, but can you tell the listeners just what sort of the itinerary will be for the wine competition in terms of how many blind, or is it going to be rapid fire?
No. I'll give you, generally speaking, what a wine contest like this is, because as you can imagine, I don't have any idea what the final testing will be. So it's a very secure thing. So there's only the four judges and one logistics person who know anything about the testing. So I don't know the details of this one, but having been to a lot of them around the world, and I can tell you that, you know, there's always in the semifinal round, or sometimes they have quarterfinal rounds, is a written exam. So a knowledge-based exam, testing their skills, not only on wine, but beer, knowledge of beer, spirits, sake, which is increasingly important in this world. Then they'll have usually some kind of blind tasting element. Could be wines, could be whiskeys of the world. It could be any, it could be sake, and tell us about what sake the styles are. They had no idea what those could be. And then usually there's some kind of service element. So that could be decanting a red wine. Maybe it's opening a champagne, usually with some kind of twist, not to make it, to give the competitors, make them think on the spot. So maybe there's dirty glasses that they have to be able to recognize. Oh, geez, there's a glass in there. It's got lipstick on. They should have made sure of that. Or maybe it's they've been asked for a vintage of a wine when from a vintage that was it. The wine was never made, and the psalms have to be able to say, oh, just wait, I know that Vega Sicilia was not produced in that year. Could I recommend this one? You know, so some of those
that's
things
mean.
Are totally
by the
on
way.
The table. Really nasty stuff.
Yeah, that's mean. The vintage one. That's a mean one. That's fun.
That is, but I think we did something like that at the Worlds in Paris this year, where it was, I think it was that Vegas, I think it was Vegas, Cecilia, where they asked for something that was, and God love them, they all knew it. So it's like impressive.
That is. How many wine competitions have you either been a part of, organized, like?
Oh, in around 10, I guess. You know, I'm privileged now that I work a lot on the international board, so I get to attend most of like the best psalms of Europe and the world competitions and some of the others. I'm mostly from the press side or the content side, but certainly get to witness a lot of it.
Do you have any that stick out in terms of some psalm accomplished a crazy feat, a wine tasting where you're like, wait a minute, that's really mean, or I can't believe they did that.
I mean, I think all sorts. You know, obviously the ones closest to my heart is we organized the Best Sommelier of the Americas in 2018 in Montreal. So having to organize a massive event like that, it was special. Pierre-Alexis Soulière of Quebec won the title with Carl Villeneuve on the stage with him. So that was exciting to have two Canadians on the podium on an event we organized. I think the last one in Paris was exciting, not only because Raymond Thompson's from Laffy, who won, has been doing it for a long time, but like having Pascaline Lepelletier from New York that works in New York, but best was, you know, an important person in the natural wine world, really well known, had so much pressure on her, and to see her do so well and come forth was amazing. I could think of Salvatore Castano in Cyprus when he won the Best Sommelier in Europe, and being on that stage, and they did a blind tasting of spirits, and they mixed in a few chartreuse, and he got them all. And then there was some post questions on chartreuse. And there was a period of time when it had moved from its original where it was made for about a 10-year period. And the guy nailed the dates. And then we're talking the 1800s or something. And he was like, oh, you know, and he was like, how the hell does anybody know this? It was incredible. But I mean, I've seen all sorts of weird tricks where, and I think I saw where Louise Lambert one time, where you go, you know, street blind wines in front of you. And I think two of them were Barolo, if I recall. And, you know, like as a song, you go into those blind tastings, your mind's conditioned to think, I'm going to get three different wines.
Yes.
Right? And she nailed, and it was like, oh my God, she nailed it. Like, how did she have the brave, be so brave to go, no, two of those are from the same plate. You know, it was crazy.
That right there kind of illustrates one of the most difficult parts of doing a blind wine tasting is you have to sort of stop trying to game it. You have to stop to think ahead, because you're right. If I'm doing a tasting, if I'm doing an exam, I never assume two wines are going to be the same varietal unless they say, okay, these are three Pinot, pick where they're from. But what you're saying, the brain wants to go in one way and you kind of have to shut that down.
Totally. We do that all the time in some class too. Like you have to go by what's in the glass, write down what's in the glass, and then look at either, you know, we do it when doing testing, look down what you're written and make your judgment from what you actually perceive it to be rather than what do you think Mark has put on your exam, right? So it's a really tough mental challenge to be able, and I think that's why the best to have mental preparation. LOCO utilized at the very top level, they're using coaches that train them as much mentally and being able to prepare themselves for the moment of the event as it is about, you know, going through more blind tastings. You know, it's really at certain levels when you get to the best song of Canada, the best song of Americas of the world, you know what you know. You know, you've crammed it in as much as you can in your brain. It's about how do I relax myself and perform on the day, right? Yeah, and I think sometimes it's the people that can relax that do that. I think Salvatore Castano from Italy, who won the best song of Europe the last time, because he went in, he was probably expected to come 30th or 40th. So he went into the whole competition with this kind of aura of casualness, relaxation. He wasn't stressed out because he didn't expect ever to get to the final. And when he got to the final, he became so charming, relaxed. It was obvious. And then he was able to just do his thing. And I think that's the great trick of it all.
That's cool. And also just hearing that about you just got to go through, go by what your notes say, winning these competitions, or if it's an exam, doing well at an exam at the quartermaster, it's about confidence. It's about trusting your own instincts versus trying to game the system.
Yeah. And that's really challenging. It's hard to explain that to people that haven't done wine, high level wine courses is, yeah, when I'm doing a math problem, I see the numbers. I know if I'm right or wrong, like I can figure it out. When you do a blind tasting, there is no, you see nothing. You have to have an absolute trust in your own skills, memory, sensory senses, without actually anything tangible being in front of you. That's crazy. So that's why when we, you know, I say, you know, this, you know, the top songs of the world are some of the most impressive people in the world, because they have not only the sensory skill, tasting skills, memory skills, but they have a knowledge that is equivalent to, you know, a lot of PhDs, you know, so you have PhD level knowledge, BL and all these other skills at the same time. Very impressive.
Yeah, it's nuts. I remember studying for my diploma level at WSET, thinking to myself, this should not be this much work, but it is. And it's like, I should become a nurse or something with the amount of time I'm studying.
Yeah, exactly. You might make more money off it, but
probably. And
well, because as much as you make on wine, we make on wine, we usually give back and more.
I always say the wallet and the waistline are the two things that get hit the most when you fall in love with wine. Let's go over the rest of the competition, or really but the whole events going on.
Yeah, so you arrived. So let's say the competitors arrive in Halifax on Sunday, November 12th. We're going to take them out on a cruise in the harbor, taste some tidal bays with them, and then they're going down to a very exclusive place in the Bedford Basin for a Nova Scotia wine and food dinner. Then the next day on the Monday, there's the semifinal round. So hope the 12 competitors all get to compete at that time. We're going to take them down to the Valley or Annapolis Valley for some to visit Benjamin Bridge, Lakeville, and Wolfville. So experience the best of Nova Scotia winemaking. They'll come back. It's a New Zealand event. We have what's called the Bar des Sommeliers, so a place where people congregate post to just kind of relax. Some great wines from Loire in New York being served there. Then the next day we have the master classes. So we'll have one from Rioja with Clarion Boutier from Quebec. William Wooters, who's the president of the International Sommelier Association, who's kind of one of my besties in the wine world. He's going to come. He's from Belgium, and he's an incredible guy, was a Michelin star chef, but he lives now in Barada in Portugal with his wife, Philippa Pato, who's the queen of Baga, and they make amazing wines. So they're going to do something on Baga and Braga sparkling wines, which is very cool. And we'll have some sacking Sochu courses. Adrian Caravello from George Brown's coming down to do some Spanish classes. Jonathan's going to do a Loire class. And then the next day, I think I'm on the stage for half an hour talking Tidal Bay and a few other, and then we'll have a few others. So it's, and then it all wraps up Wednesday afternoon at around 3:30. We start the finals. and then we announce a winner at the gala that night.
That's pretty intense. Is this open for the public? Can the public check it out?
Yeah, you know, we recommend for the people registering for Psalm University, the master classes, that they have, you know, some training, you know, the WSET3 or a Psalm, or it'll be a highly dedicated on a file. We have definitely have some events. We have a French event that's open to the public on Tuesday night, and then and we hope everybody comes out for the gala too, which is going to be a lot of great wine, a lot of great food, and a big celebration.
I want to go back to Halifax for a second. COVID. I heard that during COVID, more people started moving out of the cities and smaller towns and coming to Atlantic Canada. And I'm wondering, was one of the unintended consequences? Did that lead to some of the growth over the last 3-4 years in the wine scene? Because now you have a lot more people from all over coming.
Undoubtedly, it has. It's come with its perks and its challenges, in the sense harder and harder for people from Halifax to buy a home, because home prices tripled in that time, or at least doubled for most homes. So it's brought a lot more money to Halifax. So that's been really good for the downtown Halifax dining scene. We've seen a gazillion new restaurants open over the last couple of years. So we've had an influx of people. Our city's grown exponentially in the last few years, partly due to a lot to do with COVID and immigration. You know, we're welcoming a lot of people from Syria, Ukraine, and other places around the world. So we've grown amazingly, and quite a bit of new wealth in Halifax. So it's led to a lot more successful restaurants now on the other front. I mean, still difficult, you know, there's still with new restaurants there comes competition. So, you know, we have a lot more now what I call out of town restaurateurs,
right?
You know,
yep.
Yeah, a group that starts with an O and there's a B in there, have quite a few restaurants on the waterfront. So that's, a little bit challenging for some of our small restaurateurs to compete with new money.
Yeah. If you've an established smaller restaurant, that big new money comes in. Yeah, that's going to be a massive competition. How difficult is it to be a serial wine entrepreneur?
I think anything is as difficult as you make it. So if you it wasn't easy. Like, I think I was probably the first. I was definitely the first in Halifax to really go out on my own and try to make wine a living. And I've been lucky enough to do it. But I think it's all about, if you want it badly enough, you can make it happen. I mean, that's my kind of thing. If you work hard, you're willing to fail. You know, you're willing to, the hardest step is the first step, right? So if you willing to jump in and make it, and I had some failures, I started a something called Valley Wine Tours with a friend of mine, like 16 years ago, before it was ready. So then we kind of sold that off after about a couple of years, because it just wasn't worth it, So I haven't always, not everything goes to gold, but I've been willing to give it a try.
Well, I think any successful entrepreneur has almost as many stories of failure as they do success, no matter the industry or who the person is. I wonder, the wine tour one you started, how different would it be if you started it in 2023?
Oh my God, it'd be a dream. It'd be so much easier. There's so many more wineries now. There's so much more wine culture in this province right now. At the time, there was probably 6 wineries. and not a lot of knowledge of Nova Scotia wine out there. So we were trying to do the right thing to promote local, and we were excited about the growing local industry, but it just wasn't enough people interested and maybe a little too afraid to charge enough, be unwilling to charge for what it really cost us. So, which is a habit of mine. I tend to live Atlantic Canada. I live a relatively frugal life. I like fine things, but I don't have the fine wallet all the time. So I tend to apply that to my tours and my events and thinking too, is I still want always people to get good, great value and not have to fork over hundreds and thousands of dollars for everything we do. So that was a bit of the challenge of the wine tour.
Yeah, of course. I think I'd be horrible at that because I'd be like, oh, I can't charge you anything. It's like, well, you have a rent. You have to charge them something. How much does where you are in throughout Atlantic Canada, how much do they embrace the local wine? And I ask that because in Ontario, we always have a struggle with it where people have there's sometimes a mental block of paying $40 for an Ontario Pinot, but they'll pay the same amount for a French Pinot.
Yeah, I think we went through that for sure. I think particularly amongst the younger sets of the millennial demographic, they are totally into and happy to pay a good dollar for local. So I think, you know, Atlantic Canadians by nature always want to support local. So we have that advantage that we always want to support our neighbors. So that has been a plus to the industry, but it took a little while. You know, the industry made its mistakes for a long time producing the wrong styles of wine, but now great local support for local wines.
Where did your love of wine come from? What was your journey to where you are now?
Well, I have a degree in economics and math, and I worked in a office in Bay Street in Toronto for a little bit in a completely different business. And then I moved home and didn't know what to do. So I worked in restaurants. So I was busboy at a terrible late night diner and then worked my way up to the fine dining and said, become the best I could be. I was also a really big beer geek. So I always loved that. So I used to pull grain, volunteer to help out at a brew pub downtown in Toronto, actually, when I was working there. It's called Denison's, which was just off Yonge Street. Then I came home and helped grow the local beer scene here. Worked at one of the first brew pubs, and then it transitioned to wine.
Yeah, you wake up one day and suddenly you're debating which Cru Beaujolais to open, and you're like, how the hell did I get here? Yeah. I saw on your very lengthy LinkedIn page, director of sponsorship of the Tasting Climate Change Conference. And I'm wondering, to me, whenever I try to tell people about climate change, and I'm not going to get into the huge argument, fighting and yelling, but the one thing I always tell people is, well, most winemakers, they often pick their grapes sooner. And that's basically because it's hotter. And that, like, I'm wondering for you just how you view climate change through the lens of winemaking.
Well, I think it's climate chaos is the biggest challenge. So I think over and above like heat units and what that leads to in terms of that changes, like you say, in terms of picking times, but also can you plant the same grape variety? Because it's one thing to have the sugar level, right? But you also need the phenolics. So that might lead you to different grape varieties. So we see that in Bordeaux with those experimentals of the Iberian grapes being into the Bordeaux Appellation, where we see like Tariga and stuff like that, because it's probably indication that they see the future and that there could be need for edits in the varietals. But I think it's climate chaos is the most challenging thing for winemakers, is these freak incidents. So we see it the last few years, we've seen those frosts in France. Here we had that polar vortex. We have torrential downpours here in times that we would never have had before. So it's I think that's the biggest thing with the impact of the climate isn't so much a bit about the heat units, but you can adapt to those changes, you know.
Yeah.
It's some of these other things that are really playing havoc to our industry.
I'll just say that if Halifax becomes the center for full-bodied 100% Cabernet Sauvignon, then we have some real problems if that happens.
Well, I hope to live to that day because I think I'd be 180. But anyway, we'll see. Climate change is never good. But yes, it may mean that we make some pretty decent Pinot here at some point. Mm-hmm.
I just recently tried some really good Pinot from England. I both loved it. I'm like, huh, how much of that is because it's warmer here than what it used to be, but really good. So hey, before we end this, Mark, tell people where they can get tickets, information for the wine competition. I know there's also coming up in November. I think you guys also, there's another Wine and food festival.
A wine festival, 2,500 person wine festival this in a month and a half too. So I have that on the go too. So if you want to join the festivities at the Best Somme, it's go to www.sommeu.ca. If you want to learn more about the Halifax International Wine Festival, go to www.hfxwinefest.ca.
And that one, by the way, I was stumbling to find the date, December 2nd for the Halifax International
coast
Wine Festival.
Yeah. Coast to coast.
You're a busy guy. I think you're an important person just in terms of the growing wine awareness and just, you know, making it a more part of the culture in your slice of the world. I think it's fantastic. And congrats on your success. And I hope you get some sleep.
Okay. Not too much. Anyway, thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on the show. We'll see you soon. I hope.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, on Spotify, wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.